The content of the following broadcast is offered as is. It confers no rights or warranties. The opinions expressed here are solely those of the participants and may not reflect those of the Microsoft Corporation, its partners, friends, and family. Welcome to IT Heroes. And now here's your host, Michael J. Murphy.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this installment of IT Heroes Stories from the Trenches. These are the real stories of the men and women who are out there making a difference in IT every day. My name is Michael Murphy, and I am really pleased to have with us today Chris Corshane. Chris works, he's a security analyst for a Fortune 500 IT company, famous for their antivirus products. I use them myself. Chris, welcome to the show. I'm so pleased to have you here. I think that there's a lot of things happening in your area right now that I'm anxious to talk about. Welcome.
Oh, great to be here, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Oh, really? It's our pleasure. I'll tell you guys, when you talk to Chris, when you listen to this guy talk, I want you to think he's one of the guys that's really out there in the trenches every day. He works in the Security Operations Center. So when there's an outbreak on the internet, when there's a virus out there, this is one of the guys. He's the first line of defense. He's in the trenches, digging the ditches, holding back the fire. Is that about what you do, Chris?
Yep, pretty much. You can extend that military metaphor to pretty much everything that we do day in, day out. And in fact, I work with a lot of guys at our prior service in services, Air Force, Navy, Intel, as well as signal and communications experience.
Right on. So the last 3 weeks have probably been pretty busy for you, I would think. Is that about right?
Yeah, you could say that. We definitely had a lot going on. We had, for about a period of a week or so, got to live life at Category 4, which is basically our system was dealing, the overall system, meeting all of our customers and our corporate entity, as it were. We're dealing with two Category 3 worms, which came out, the Zotov,
so Zotov.
And all the variations therein, and SBOT, which, if memory serves, came out on the weekend of the 16th of August. So that basically kicked us up to Category 4 alert status.
So let's start with Zotov, right? Because Zotov happened first.
Sure.
Now, that's related to the vulnerability in plug and play that was described in the Microsoft Security Bulletin MS-05039, right?
Yes, that would be that one, and I believe it also had one or two other exploits that I'd like to play with.
Okay, but principally, that patch that was released when was that? Third Tuesday of August, or second Tuesday of August?
That would be second Tuesday, the Microsoft Tuesday. Yep.
And how long, the patch was out on Tuesday, so the fix and the vulnerability were both disclosed simultaneously to the public on that second Tuesday of August. How soon before the exploit code was out there?
Well, I believe the timeline, yeah, like you said, Microsoft Super Patch Tuesday had both the patch and the actual description of the exploit. Released that Tuesday. I believe they had a working code to actually capitalize on the exploit released on the web Thursday. And I think the timeline went somewhere like early Sunday morning, late Saturday.
Late Saturday, early Sunday, you had infected machines on the internet.
Correct.
So
it really, really spread on that Sunday and definitely went into high gear first thing Monday morning. Once most business users made it into the office.
So now, would you agree, let's see, here we have a case where Microsoft releases a patch. Within 72 hours, there's exploit code. That patch has been reverse engineered, and within 72 hours, there's exploit code downloadable out on the internet, right?
Exactly. A lot of enterprising people with a good bit of free time on their hands.
Yeah, way too much time on their hands. And if we look back now historically, right, like if you remember NIMDA, Microsoft released the patch that addressed the NIMDA vulnerability. And it was 331 days, if memory serves me right, between the time that the exploit was defined and a patch provided for it, and the code hit the net. Then with Sasser, it was something like 180 days. And what we see is that we're moving closer and closer to this zero-day exploit. How much of a threat do you see that as being in the world of tomorrow?
Well, as I understand it, it's one of those things that I think if you ask that question to security professionals in the basic line of work that I'm in, if you just ask them, say, last May 2004, when Sasser really broke, they would say that, you know, zero-day exploit, while possible, isn't particularly feasible, and we're just not quite there yet. But unfortunately, I think they're definitely the bad guys are definitely doing everything they can to close that gap as quickly as possible. So I don't want to say that it could happen, you know, tomorrow or next Tuesday, but it's feasible that it'll be around the corner sometime in the relatively near future.
And what's the principal challenge there? If we're ever in that boat, if we're ever in that situation where you've got a zero-day exploit, what's going to be the real challenge, or what's the real fear?
Well, there's a couple philosophies that are, I guess, currently doing battle out in the general IT security spectrum. The one basically being the of an exploit, the Zobot issue, illustrates it perfectly, where you know of an exploit, you have patches provided by a vendor for the OS. You go through and have some sort of patch management system in place. And you're quickly, as fast as humanly and electronically possible, you're patching all these systems to protect against this exploit. And that's sort of been the traditional model.
And I want to espouse automated patch management solutions.
Oh, of course.
Clearly, we both know the value. I think anybody listening to this discussion knows the value of an automated solution to patch management deployment. But
incredibly important.
Incredibly important, right, for the health and well-being of the network. The concern that I have is that before I deploy patches out onto my network or service packs, hotfix updates, etc., I want to test those first. And I want to know that in my environment they're not going to break other things.
Of course.
But now there's this pressure, this criticality to get it out. How do you see your customers balancing those needs?
Well, unfortunately, as I'm sure with any organization that runs a very large, complex environment, typically pretty heterogeneous, like the vast majority of all of our customers, it's the testing time, and this is where Zotop really woke, I think, a lot of people up, is that it would take, say, a few, at least a couple to several business days to go through and allow IT staff to test for the patch and make sure that, one, it's effective, and two, it doesn't break anything as it's, patching the system. And if you've got that window of opportunity being reduced darn near, exponentially with each new big, generational leap in worm and blended threat, then, of course, that's, you're playing a pretty bad losing game. Mm-hmm. So the second philosophy that's out there that's really starting to get a lot more traction, thank God, is that you have more of, as opposed to trying to patch and trying to deal with known threats, or at least applying a bit of imagination to try to defend against the more commonly thought of threats, it's to go and provide security for the stuff that you just don't know about. Meaning that you have network sensors and host-based sensors going through and actually detailing out, okay, what is normal activity, what's normal behavior on this network and on this host. And basically go through and, you know, run a little quick little audit, or presumably more of an extensive one.
Auditing what? The actual traffic on the wire?
Exactly. All the above. Traffic on the wire for that for the network segment. Basic traffic inbound, outbound from the host.
Mm-hmm.
General and by extension, general behavior of that and activity of the applications on the host.
So the function of these sensors is to provide a baseline for network and host activity that you can then compare that baseline against what may be illicit activity.
Exactly.
Is that the idea?
Exactly. And to an extent, the new generation of host and network intrusion prevention systems are addressing this. It's still more or less the first generation of that, but the idea is that we know what normal, what acceptable behavior is, and so anything that deviates from that norm, you know, we, just for the sake of, you know, our security and the sanity of the IT staff, we can just go through and assume that everything beyond that, or not included in that, is abnormal and most likely due to some sort of, you know, new worm infection that we may not be aware of, or possibly some, you know, some illicit behavior,
some
activity
penetration
on the part of the, you know, on part of the individual user, or, you know, a user external to that host or network.
So now, if I were running these sensors on my network and we got infected with Zotab, what would they show me? What illicit activity or unusual activity would be red flagged in that case?
Well, the big identifier that we saw a lot of was excessive 445 TCP scanning, usually involving, if you actually break down the datagram, break down the packet, and look at the session data, you can see a lot of references to House of DeBus, D-A-B-U-S. And,
what is that, House of DeBus?
That was basically the hacker organization responsible for the worm. Now, one of the sort of interesting, from a, you know, very high-end, geeky security point of view, with the Zotab outbreak, is that, and we've been seeing this with other worms and viruses, is that you're starting to see some competition between hacker groups.
Hmm.
One, you know, group A will release variant, you know, X, B, and D, while group two or is releasing like variant C, you know, E and F. But we basically have this ongoing little arms race, where one group will go through, grab a variant, deconstruct it, reverse engineer what's going on, maybe improve the code, add a couple more exploits.
improve its destructive force.
That's exactly it.
Uh-huh.
And then spin that back out into the web.
Admirable.
And that was actually what had happened with Zotab, where the first couple variants were, I don't want to say a proof of concept, but they were significantly lesser, I guess, less evil than some of the newer versions, which were much more effective at propagation, you know, pushing the exploit and or connecting, sort of searching, scanning the web or the network. The algorithm that they simply used to scan networks was much more efficient, and maybe the delivery mechanism for the exploit payload to a detected host was more efficient. And so they just, you know, improved the efficiencies within their, you know, their little worm.
Really, really admirable. Really well done, I'll tell you. Now, here's that was sarcasm. Just in case anybody's wondering, that was bitter, dripping sarcasm. Now, in the case of Zotab, my understanding is that the Turkish authorities arrested a 21-year-old kid and the Moroccan authorities arrested an 18-year-old kid. And they believe that these kids are responsible for the... Well, I guess they're 21 and 18. I guess you can't really call them kids. But these young people were responsible for this generation of worms, or, you know, or this occurrence of worms. How did we track those folks down? How do we find them? Now, you're saying that this stuff was all autographed, right, by DeBus.
Yeah, and that unfortunately was, for them at least, was, you know, how part of, you know, how that, you know, how they were eventually arrested. Actually, it aided the investigation. There's myriad stories out on the web about some of the investigators and other, you know, crime fighters that are basically out there using basically basic you know, gumshoe techniques, as well as general IT security principles and training.
Cyber
just
forensics.
Pardon?
Cyber forensics.
Exactly. Right on. Thank you.
Where would I go to see one of those stories or get some more information on that? Any idea off the top of your head?
SANS.org.
SANS.org. That's a great
site.
It's
a brilliant organization, and they do, I just can't say enough good things about the work that those guys do.
And that's SANS.org.
SANS.org, exactly. And they're definitely the, you know, one-stop shop for at least getting a lot more of the information on this. They also provide several links out to the other media sites that may go into a lot more in-depth explanation of some of the exploits and some of the worms that may be plaguing the internet that day. And also they also manage the D-Shield system. It's D-Shield, basically it's a series of honeypots as well as other sensors that are out on the internet at large.
Now, that's an interesting concept, the honeypot, and it's a newer concept, I think, in security. Can you describe a little bit of what that is?
Yeah, the premise of that is to simply put a system out there that may not be completely patched or may have limited patch or service pack level.
Uh-huh.
And the idea is that if it's out there, it's an attractive target for some, you know, any unscrupulous hacker, cracker, script kiddie, whatever term you'd want to use. But for an individual that may want to either, you know, try experiment with a new and upcoming exploit.
Or just plain old hijack your box.
Or simply go and hijack the box. And what the people that are managing the honeypot will then do is go back and basically do a little after-action review, dig back through the logs, figure out how the system was compromised, if any specific exploit to any published vulnerability or unpublished, if they put out, you know, I know Microsoft for a while has been running Windows 2003 server in basically the form of honeypots out there, running different competitions to try to get people to hack their and go through and compromise your system.
Hack this system.
And, you know, of course, this can include rewards, but typically it's just done to by security professionals to just simply figure out what's out there, presuming that if there's something new coming along, they can hopefully catch it as people that are writing it and perfecting the code launch it against the honeypot first before, you know, the public at large.
Before the production machines are affected.
Exactly.
Right on. Well, I'll tell you, Chris, it sounds like you've had a couple of long weeks, and we are just about out of time here. So I'm going to thank you for your time, and with that, we're going to close.
Well, thank you for having me, Michael.
My pleasure. This has been Chris Corshane, security analyst, talking about the recent outbreak of Zotab and some of the challenges that face us as we move into and in opposition to the emergent threats of the 21st century internet. This is Michael Murphy. This has been another installment of IT Heroes, stories from the trenches, the stories of the men and women that make a difference in IT every day. Thanks for being with us.
IT Heroes with your host, Michael J. Murphy, was recorded at Matador Studios in Monmouth Junction, New Jersey. Produced and engineered by Giles Davis. Original music performed and composed by Giles Davis.